Computer Simulations of Evolution by Robert C. Newman. Abstract of this talk, a discussion of three computer programs which simulate certain features of evolution. Two of these are similar to programs devised by Richard Dawkins and discussed in his book The Blind Watchmaker. One of these two, Biomorph, exploring relationships between the genetics and morphology of an organism. The other, Shakes, demonstrating how selection can speed a process that would be very slow if left to pure chance. The third program, Munsell, explores the capabilities of mutation and natural selection in constructing organisms that consist of letters organized into English words and phrases. What are we doing in this talk? We're not giving you a literature search of computer simulations of evolution. We're not dealing with the origin of life, nor are we dealing with the competition and spread of varieties, competing varieties in a population. Rather, we want to describe and investigate three programs that relate to the mechanism of evolution. Two of these are described by Dawkins in his book Blind Watchmaker, and we call these two Biomorph and Shakes. I don't believe those were his names. And a third program, it was devised by myself, and I give it the name Munsell. Let's look first of all at the program Biomorph. My program has been slightly simplified from that of Dawkins, but the idea of the program is that one builds up organisms from genetic information and then selects among the various mutants. The gene is a sequence of 8 small integers, and these integers generate a tree by controlling the branch length, the angles between branches, the number of levels of branching, what one calls recursion depth. Here is in our picture is a sample biomorph tree, and you can see way in which a branching angle operates and what a branch length is and what the recursion depth represents. In this particular program, Biomorph, the trees have mirror symmetry, so they look somewhat like trees, and given a starting gene, the program then constructs all one-step mutations from that gene and displays them on the screen. The operator then selects which of these mutants will succeed the parent, and in this way follows out the history of this particular organism, as we might imagine it. The program then repeats using the chosen mutant and constructs all one-step mutations, displays them on the screen, and the operator selects which mutant will then select that mutant. Biomorph output looks a little bit like this. Here in this particular picture, we have in the center of the screen the parent, and then 8 one-step mutations here, changing each one of the 8 numbers in the gene, not giving you all possibilities, but the result of changing each of these 8, and so the operator will then select one of those. So here we see the mother here now has a encircled with red, surrounded by the next generation of mutant daughters. Here's another example of the output of such a program, and again, in the middle, we have the mother surrounded by the 8 mutant daughters, next generation of mutant daughters. Some lessons we can learn from a program like Biomorph. It shows us how mutation operates on DNA. It shows us how selection operates on the developed form, not the DNA. The operator is not looking at the numbers. He's looking at the pictures and selecting out which one to select. And we can see here that identical forms can conceal different genetics, that this leaves some room for what we might call neutral mutation then. And so that is a quick tour of the program Biomorph. The program Shakes is based on the observation made, we're not sure by who, give a few monkeys enough time and they will eventually type out the works of Shakespeare. Dawkins, in the program Shakes, seeks to circumvent the problem of monkeys typing Shakespeare, having the concern that this would take an utterly outrageous time to do so. So Dawkins tries to circumvent this problem of the outrageous time. He suggests we choose a target sentence or phrase, and the target phrase he chooses out of one of Shakespeare's plays, I think it was out of King Lear, but I'm not sure about that. Methinks it is like a weasel, and so we show that here. And that's your target, and you start with gibberish of the same length. And then basically the program mutates the gibberish, selecting a mutant if it is closer to the target as a new parent. And then this is repeated with the new parent, and then gradually one will approach the target sentence. He thinks it is like a weasel. Well, gibberish converges to the target to reach the goal much faster than if the monkeys were typing randomly. You have essentially added some kind of selection here. Dawkins gets convergence with his program in typically 40 to 70 generations. Dawkins doesn't describe his program in detail, so one can't tell how he generated the mutants, nor how many mutants he constructed per generation from which he made his choices. Here's a sample from Dawkins. This is what the initial gibberish looks like. I'm not going to pronounce that over the audio or attempt it, so you have to be looking at the picture here on our PowerPoint. And after 10 steps, here's what Dawkins has now, which is not obviously closer to the result. But by 20 generations, you can see ye thinks as the opening, what is that, 7 or 8 words there, and some other stuff that might be heading in that direction. By 30, you have me thinks it is like a wetsy, etc. So it's now converging pretty strongly. And by 40, me thinks it is like a weesus. And by 50, me thinks it is chelike a weesio. And 60, me thinks it is like a weesep. And finally, 64, me thinks it is like a weasel. So basically, Dawkins' argument is, although it would take ages for monkeys to type such a meaningful sentence, indeed with a procedure of this sort, making random mutations and selecting the one that is closest to the target, one can get there rather quickly. My version has one mutation each generation, and the mutation is randomly chosen for where it will occur in the gibberish, and what type of mutation it will be, that is, what letter of the alphabet, or whether it will be a space, etc. And then this mutant is compared with the parent, and the, if it is closer to the parent, it is selected, and if it is not, the parent is retained. So I get much slower convergent than Dawkins does. It typically takes over 1,000 generations for this to converge on the target. And that suggests that Dawkins is doing something quite different. Many generation mutations per generation, pick the best one. Don't let the ones who have arrived at the right location change, something of that sort. So Dawkins is doing something much more favorable than my version here, one mutation per generation, randomly chosen for where that mutation will occur in the sentence, gibberish, whatever, and randomly chosen for what kind it will be. So my version, the target methinks it is like a weasel, is not reached in 1,000 generations. The target happy birthday is not reached in 1,000 generations, much shorter phrase. The target quo vadis is reached in 867 generations. A sample here. Niao Kara, the opening gibberish. We're aiming at quo vadis, by the way. And in 50 generations, we get quo bubagum and quo bubagum, actually. And in 100, that hasn't improved much. by 200. It is quoades, and by 300, it's gotten the space in the right place between the two words. But the first word is now right. The second word is wadis, I guess, and that gets to wadis. So it's only one letter away at 400, but no closer at 500. And finally makes it by 867. And the reason it converges so slowly is the machine, the mutations, don't know which one to mutate, and they don't know which way to mutate it. And so you have to randomly get both the location and the type of mutation without any help from the target. So somehow Dawkins is working around this, and I suspect that when he gets a letter right in the right place, he doesn't allow that particular letter to mutate again, something which doesn't occur in real life. Well, as I mentioned, my version modified one mutant at each position, each generation. This is another program. This is one that's made a little faster than the other one is. I call this Shake H. Okay, don't remember why I named it that. So my version of the program Shakes modified. Now one mutant at each position each generation. So that will solve the problem that you got with Quo Vadis taking such a long time to find that last one. This multi-mutant is then compared with the parent, and the better of the two survives. I now get much faster convergence than before, but this is still slower than Dawkins' convergence. So he's doing something even better than this, one mutant at each position. So here's a sample again for the same one. We start out with Niao Kara as our opening gibberish. And 20, well, I can't pronounce that. Rsobvodk, yeah, well, whatever. And still rather hard to pronounce at 30 or 40. At 50, Ruoavadis. So we've actually got the second word complete, but we don't have a space and we don't have the first word right yet. And at 60, that's still the same thing. And at 70, it's still the same thing. Mm-hmm. And at 92, it's Quo Vadis. So much, much faster convergence. 92 instead of 800 and whatever that was. Some lessons from Shakes and the upgraded version Shaka. It does show that a ratchet mechanism works, that thing that measures which is closer and always picks the closer one, so you're never getting further away. And this is an important reason that has convinced many people that evolution must be correct, that when you've got mutations and a mutation is better than its parent, then it's going to survive, so that you must get a better fit, better survivability, that sort of thing. Therefore, evolution must be correct. Huh? But this that we've seen in this program is guided evolution. Huh? That is intelligent design. You have picked a target, and you are comparing it with the target, which is not what we would call natural selection, but intelligent selection or artificial selection. It's a considerably more efficient process, by the way, even than artificial selection, since it has a target, which an artificial selection person might not, okay? Might not know what the genes really are supposed to look like, just only knows what he wants the animal or plant to look like. So this is considerably more efficient process, even than artificial selection, with this target, to say nothing of natural selection. The program Shakes does not solve the time problem. And our question is, which of these various versions, my two or Dawkins, is the most realistic? Mutation rate in eukaryotes is about 10 to the minus 8 per replication. So all these versions ignore the time taken for the mutant to take over the population, as well as the rarity of the mutation itself. Hmm? All of these versions suggest a problem for mutating into complex or optimal structures. That is, that the last pieces of the puzzle are highly constrained. That shows up very clearly in the samples I ran, as we don't see too much in Dawkins on what his last steps look like. But when you're down to you need one particular change at one particular place to get the right result, that last piece is highly constrained, and therefore highly unlikely. We move thirdly to the program Munsell. This is a program that attempts to simulate mutation and natural selection by analogy with human language. The idea here is that we have a letter string which functions as both the gene and the organism, so we simplify that step. Mutation is random change in the content, that is changing one or more of the letters, and or the length of the string of letters. Selection is naturalized by requiring that each grouping in the string be an English word, but not having a target, okay? So it's not like the artificial selection with target that we saw in shakes. We picked it in this case to be an English word. One could perfectly well choose some other language, if you like, for that particular thing, as long as your available letters were the letters that exist in that particular language. Sample run of Munsell. Start with a single letter. In this case, we started with the letter C. And it takes four steps to get to the first one-letter word, O, the poetic word. 28 steps to get to the first two-letter word, la. 43 steps to get to the first three-letter word, fe. 54 steps to get to the first four-letter word, care, C-A-R-E. 61 to get to the first five-letter word, cared. And 382 still leaves us with five-letter word. So at 382 steps, we haven't found a six-letter word yet. Some interest here in what is going on, huh? So that's one way of doing it. You start with a single letter chosen at random and let it run. Another way to run it is to start with a fixed length, but start with gibberish of some sort. And so here's our starting one there, and I won't attempt to pronounce that, but you can see it's a fairly long string. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23. 23 letters and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 blanks, so 28 length altogether. Now you have fixed length, so it you don't add anything, but you can change stuff. And it's 11 steps before we even reach a single first English word, hi, H-I, and 66 before we reach a second English word, A-R-T as well. So we've now got two English words, art and hi. 81, we pick up a third English word, so we've got art, me, and hi, me, personal pronoun. 98, before you pick up a fourth English word, the word go up near the beginning. So we've got go, art, re, and hi now, me change or read. So with 98 generations, we get four words, and the longest one is three letters. You can see that generating something long that is meaningful is going to take a long while in this kind of a scheme. The current version of this program has the operator do the selecting. To make it more objective, probably we should use a spell checker to do the checking. The program generates words of 1 to 4 letters rather easily. The relative frequency of the space character and the nature of selection tends to keep words short. Little success in getting intelligibility in hundreds of steps with this particular program. So, some lessons from Munsell. Complex organisms involve hierarchies of structure, somewhat like intelligible writing. That is, letters are put together to make words. Words are put together to make phrases. Phrases put together to make sentences. Sentences put together to make paragraphs, something of that sort. Mutation only works at the lowest level. dissertation works on nucleotides, and our program works on letters. So it becomes tougher to get anything acceptable as we move up the hierarchy. You would need some way to recognize that you've got good words and store them and perhaps use them further on or something to get some kind of a hierarchical structure there. A non-selected mutation produces gibberish. You can start out from good stuff, and with non-selected mutation it goes to gibberish very quickly. Neutral mutations spread only by random walk. So we see some kind of a functional isolation here that it's hard to see how to get into anything functional. Many combinations cannot be reached by single mutations from acceptable smaller groups. And that seems to be a problem that at least appears to be a problem for evolution in living things as well. It's very close to the idea developed by Michael Behe in his Darwin Black Box with the idea of functional irreducible complexity, excuse me. Our question, and it relates to the whole question of whether mutation and natural selection really is a good explanation for living things, is what is the relative size of islands of intelligibility versus the oceans of gibberish that they are surrounded by? How big are these islands of intelligibility? How close together are they to other islands of intelligibility? Can you jump across them? That sort of thing. And the question really is, can you really get there from here? This is the challenge that Behe has set before the evolutionary community, if you like. Can you get to complex organs and organisms from very simple stuff? Can you cross the higher levels of the biological classification system? So, with that little tour of computer simulations of evolution, we close with the question, what about computer simulations of evolution? And our answer at this point is, they don't look promising. They don't look like they're going to suggest that evolution is really going to work in the way it needs to work to develop from simple living things to develop the complex, hierarchical, functional structures that we actually see in living things. In fact, the computer simulation of evolution rather seem to suggest some sort of intelligent design, something intervening to jump over these things and produce something that